Okay, we are live. Hey Supernaturals, it is your host, Beverly Hines. I am also the CEO and founder of HairScripts, the platform that is connecting beautiful baddies like you to dermatologists, trichologists, and other hair restoration professionals who can help you treat your hair loss. So I am really excited about today's guest. We have board certified dermatologist, Dr. Radha. Dr. Radha is going to talk to us today about something called androgenic alopecia, okay, aka female pattern hair loss. Now, if you guys don't know my backstory, that is what I was diagnosed with. So I am really excited to dig into this topic because we need the tea. How can we treat this? Is it reversible? And the whole nine. But before we go into all of that, Dr. Radha, if you can just formally introduce yourself, tell us about who you are, where you're located, your practice, et cetera. And then how did you, tell us about your quick journey to hair restoration.
Sure. So thank you so much for having me. First of all, I think this is terrific. And it is a condition that is really come to the forefront now. I think it's been around for many, many years and we haven't had great treatments for it. So I'm really glad to be on the program. So thank you. As Beverly mentioned, I am a dermatologist, board certified. I've been in practice for about 15, 16 years, about 8 of those years now in New York City. I have 2 or 3 hats, I should say. The first is that I see patients in private practice in New York. Mm-hmm. And then the second is that I actually run a laboratory, and that is in Long Island. And what we do is we process skin specimens, pathology specimens, including hair specimens. And I basically run the lab, and there are a number of dermatologists in the practice, and the biopsies that we do, you know, I read them, I run the entire lab. So I have a macro and a micro approach to everything that I do. And I love science. I'm super curious, and I love my patients. So the third hat is that I teach. I have a teaching position at Cornell. So I am really, really happy about that because it really brings me back to remember when I was a resident and I leaned on all those wonderful doctors who took the time out to teach me. So that's who I am. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you a little bit about hair. And by the way, Beverly, I've also experienced androgenetic hair loss. So it's a subject that's very personal to me. And I think that's a lot of the reason why I became so interested in hair. Hair conditions, hair loss is actually one of the most complex parts of dermatology training. And the hair cycle is extremely complex, and diagnosing the condition is very the different conditions, not just androgenetic alopecia. Oftentimes women have a combination. So I'll just launch into sort of what I've found in my practice. Over the years, what I've realized is that many patients come in and they have hair loss for a lot of different reasons, life changes. And if you think about a woman's life path with hormones and, you know, adolescence, puberty, then running, you know, then the childbearing years, and then transitioning from then to the perimenopausal,
right,
then to the postmenopausal period, all of that, those changes, and not to mention diet, lifestyle, stress, have such an impact on our hair and hair and skin and nails, because they're really, really metabolically active parts of our body.
Right.
And hair in particular is very, very sensitive to changes in our environment, to chemicals that we use on our skin, to stress and to hormones and to medications and other conditions that we might have going on, like thyroid disease and so forth. So it's a very complicated diagnosis, management, treatment, and a lot of times people don't have just one thing. So I would like to mention that. But I'm open. So I'm here. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Right, absolutely. So let's jump right in. I mean, first of all, thank you. You shared a lot. And so first of all, I cannot tell, right? Because obviously just looking at you, I cannot tell that you've struggled with any form of hair loss. So, right. I mean, that to me, that's positive news, right? So yes. I want to dive into the topic a little bit, and then I want to talk about your experience. Right. So today we're talking about specifically androgenic alopecia. So for everyone who's listening that does not know, exactly what is androgenic alopecia?
So androgenetic alopecia is essentially when women have an excess of androgens. So androgens are the primarily male hormones, and those we all have levels of those of that hormone in our bloodstream. But there are some people who have a genetic predisposition, perhaps a familial predisposition, perhaps there's other conditions that make them more prone to being sensitive to basically the death of the hair follicles because of the androgens that are circulating in our bloodstream. We may have certain receptors on our hair follicles that are very sensitive to those circulating hormones, and then that creates a gradual thinning, usually starting in the frontal scalp, but also in the middle of the scalp. But one of the main findings that you see early on is that the hair becomes a little more fragile, a little bit more thin, and you get a widening of the central part gradually over time. And this can actually happen at any age, but it's more common later in life, of course.
Wow. So let's park there, because you said that it's an excess of androgen. So is it something that is what you're either susceptible or you're not? Can you actually prevent androgenic alopecia?
If you catch it early, you can prevent it. If you don't catch it early, it's a little harder.
Wow.
So unfortunately, that's the case. If you think about it, it's very similar to male pattern thinning.
Right.
You know, once it progresses to a certain state, then it's difficult to bring hair back. One thing I can say is that hair transplantation does work for men and for women, and there are certain parts of the scalp that are not as sensitive to the androgen excess. And as I said, if you start early and you think about some of the non-prescription based treatments that you can do, like lifestyle health modification,
right,
make sure that you're optimizing, you know, your vitamin mineral intake, not damaging your hair too much, that can very much help.
No,
it's a smaller subset of people who have irreversible issues.
Oh, okay. So if there's a small subset of people with irreversible, so then you're saying there is hope if you've been diagnosed. So now,
yes.
Great. So before we go into treatment and we break it down a little bit more specifically for our audience, if I'm just a regular person,
yeah,
which I, right? How yes. does androgenic alopecia present, right, to me? So I'm in the mirror. What do I need to look for, or what do I see for me to start saying, wait a minute, something's not right?
You're going to notice that your hair is thinner, that your part is a little wider, that you pull your hair back. Perhaps you have more of a forehead than you thought that you had.
Wow.
Those are probably the main findings. There may be some hair shedding associated with it. It's interesting because not everybody has that, but it can cycle. So there may be times where you feel that when you wash your hair, you have more hair that comes out than normal, but it's not a consistent pattern.
Right.
A little cyclical. When it gets to that point, that's when most people come in to see me. They notice more hair on the drain, basically, and then start obsessing about it. And then they start looking at their hair very closely. And then they start noticing small changes like a widening part and a receding hairline in the frontal part.
Right. And I also want to remind my supernaturals that androgenic alopecia is only one form of hair loss, right? So there are many. And as you said before in the beginning, that many of them, it's confusing, right? Many of them present the same exact way.
Correct.
So now, I'm already noticing, you know, not saying me, but if I'm someone who's noticing a lot of these symptoms, yes, I can't just say, well, oh, that's androgenic alopecia, right? So how can I tell? What do I need to do to find out that it's specifically androgenic alopecia and how to treat that one?
Well, I definitely think it's worthwhile to seek help about it. There is help and there are experts in this field. It's really important to understand that when there's two types of hair loss that we categorize, scarring and non-scarring. Sometimes it's very difficult even for experts to tell, and that might require a scalp biopsy, which would be done in the office. A lot of times we do hair pull tests in the office. We examine the scalp to make sure that there's no flaking or folliculitis and other sort of inflammatory causes of hair loss. If somebody is in a particular part and time in their life, perhaps pregnancy, they may notice less hair shedding, but then after birth and they have a lot of shedding, and that's not androgenetic. It is related to hormonal shifts, but that's actually something called telogen effluvium. And those two conditions can be difficult to distinguish. Acute telogen effluvium that can happen from medications or stress or hospitalizations or postpartum is a little easier to recognize, but there is a form of telogen effluvium that is called chronic telogen effluvium.
Oh.
And come, it can really be a mixed bag with androgenetic alopecia. And when you think that you have androgenetic alopecia, perhaps you had a mom that had it, a sister or relatives, and it sort of seems that might be what you have, it's perfectly reasonable to try to use over-the-counter approaches. But if they don't work, I think that's when you may want to seek a medical evaluation, just to make sure that, you know, you're not missing multiple diagnoses and that you're on the right treatment, because there are many different treatments.
Right. And so before we go into some over-the-counter or maybe just one over-the-counter treatment that you would recommend.
Yes.
Here at Hair Scripts, we always suggest and we recommend that our listeners, that our followers go and seek help right away, right? Because there's so many different types of hair. And then you said there's scarring and non-scarring. So can we just park there really quickly and just explain the difference?
Yeah. So scarring alopecia is when you have hair loss and it results in an actual scar that forms in the area where the hair follicles are. If that can have a lot more symptomatology in terms of not just the appearance of hair loss, but you can have, itching and burning types of symptoms. You can have acne-like bumps on the scalp and pimple-like lesions. That is definitely a more difficult process to manage, actually. And there are some of those that are autoimmune. Some of those are caused by infections, including ringworm. So it would be important to get evaluated for that. Some can be secondary to bacterial infections, and some can be self-induced. And not that we know that we're doing this, but when you use chemicals and flat irons and relaxers and perms and so forth, that can cause problems in the scalp. And actually over time, with particularly pulling the scalp into, the hair into different configurations, can cause a slow scarring loss. Those can be managed also.
Mm-hmm.
There are treatments for them, but they're going to require a lot more medical management.
Right.
And then the flip side are the non-scarring alopecias. And these are going to be the androgenetic alopecia, which is male pattern and female pattern. And there's telogen effluvium that has the chronic form and the acute form. And then there's something called alopecia areata, mm-hmm. which is actually an autoimmune condition where your own white blood cells are attacking the hair follicle and causing them to die.
So as far as the least common denominator, the difference between scarring and non-scarring, based on what I'm hearing, is that scarring is non-reversible. And
within reason, if you catch it early and you have inflammation going on, so say if you coming in, you have symptoms, you're catching it in the process of scarring. So if you capture at that stage and you intervene, then you may be able to prevent. And in some cases, interestingly enough, there are these things called stem cells, and they reside in our scalp, and they are even in scarred down skin. And there may be some ways, novel ways, to try to trigger some awakening of those stem cells to try to regrow hair. And then, of course, I really want to emphasize, I know we all think of hair transplantation. I don't do hair transplantation.
Yeah.
It's not a plug for me. But I do think that if you really have a scarring that's irreversible, that is something to consider. And there's so much innovation in that field. So.
Right. And we're going to touch on it on hair transplantation, okay?
Yeah.
In a bit.
Okay.
So I just want to finish that thought. And then non-scarring is not the one you prefer. You don't prefer any form, but if you are to be diagnosed, non-scarring, like you said, is mostly the one that you can work with a little more, that there is more opportunity to reverse, correct? I just want to make that
clear. I think that's generally true.
There's exceptions,
but I think generally, yes.
Okay. So now, like you heard that, guys, ladies, men, anyone listening, if you are presenting some of the symptoms that she mentioned, right, your hair is thinning, your edges are going to the back. They're being pulled back, right? Your hair seems way more fragile. You're seeing some balding either in the front or you're seeing some thinning and balding at the crown, right? Your parts are getting wider. Please don't slather a whole bunch of oil on your scalp. Let's not do this, okay? We are normalizing going to see a professional. So not even my question, but speak really quickly to the woman, to the man. Speak to the person who is just like, I don't want to go see a doctor. I don't want to see a professional. I mean, what do you say to them, and what do you think is the reluctance? What's stopping them from just seeing a professional?
I really think that there's a misconception that we can't treat these conditions. And I think that comes a lot from the professionals in the field themselves, because for many, many years, we didn't have great treatments. We would throw everything but the kitchen sink at them. But I will tell you that in the last 8 to 10 years, there have been so many advances in trying to decipher what it is you have, why you have it, and in a personalized way. So I do think the reluctance is because there's this age-old adage that, oh, well, I'm just getting older and there's nothing I can do about it. I went to this doctor or that doctor and they just gave me minoxidil and it burned my scalp and made me uncomfortable and I didn't really like to use anything, you know, every night forever for the rest of my life. And, you know, if I take an oral medication, it might give me other problems. So I guess, you know, there's nothing really anybody can do about it. But that's not true.
But there you go. But that's not true. And then let's talk about pricing, right? Okay. Some people just feel like I can't afford it.
Yes, yes. Well, the over-the-counter options can be affordable. And I've always been a big fan of generics. I think they work great. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks that it has to be a brand, but it doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. Many years, you know, I've recommended for some of my male and female patients the Kirkland Costco's brand of minoxidil. You know,
brand of minoxidil. Okay, Costco.
Yeah, that was years ago. Maybe 10 years ago they had it.
Right.
And it was more cost effective.
So does insurance cover at least an evaluation? I mean, and it's different for different providers and practices.
It depends on the insurance that you have. Anybody who has flexible spending accounts can probably get some coverage. There has also been in the past some problems with getting alopecia as a diagnosis covered. I remember about 5-6 years ago, there were patients I was seeing and they were coming in for alopecia. We didn't know what it was. So we did a workup which included a biopsy and perhaps some blood work. And some of that wasn't covered because the insurance company didn't think that it was.
Oh, traumatic. I'm going to lobby that.
Yeah, I agree.
Stop it. They need to cover that, especially for women.
So I agree.
Now I'm a patient, right? Yes. Let's hold our audience's hand, walk us through the process. So I finally made that decision. You know what? I've been dealing with this for too long. I'm going to go to hairscriptsapp.com and then be, you know, matched to a vetted professional.
Okay. Sure. Yay.
I'm going to schedule my appointment. Sorry, guys, I had to plug me. I have to. But I'm going to schedule my appointment with Dr. Radha. So I walk into your office. This is the first day. I'm telling you what's going on. What happens? How do we diagnose the androgenic alopecia? And then how do you treat?
So the first thing that I do is we take a pretty lengthy history.
Okay.
So, you know, we need to know what medications you're on. We need to know what supplements you're on. We need to know what you've done already. We need to know what you're allergic to. We need to know what other medical conditions you might have. And I ask extensive social history too, because it is important to know what kind of stressors are going on in your life right now. And all of that is extremely important. Then the next thing that I do is I literally will look through your scalp. I will tug some hairs out to see what comes out. I'll ask you, when was the last time you washed your hair? I'll ask you about symptoms. Do you have any itching? Do you have any burning? That sort of thing. I'd love to know exactly what hair products that you're using as well, just for how you clean your hair, how often you wash your hair, and what else are you doing to your hair? How do you style your hair regularly? Do you use heating products and all of that? So that way I can try to figure out if there are other factors going on. If I look at the patient and it's pretty clear that it is androgenetic alopecia, then, you know, I will start with some of the traditional options for them. I mean, some people have, many people come to me because they're really not sure if they should start minoxidil. Mm-hmm. So I will go through, so I have sort of a stepwise fashion way of how I approach it. It depends a little bit on the patient, because some patients are not really interested in using, minoxidil. They might want some alternative therapies. They might ask about supplementation. They ask about diet. They ask about hormone testing. So I'll listen to the patient is very important. But the traditional approach is going to be, for women, topical minoxidil.
Topical minoxidil, yes. Is that Rogaine?
Correct. Yes. I'm using the generic. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yes. For everyone topical minoxidil is Rogaine.
Yes.
And which concentration do you recommend?
You know, women should really be using 5% to start, and it's twice a day. Although I find that one of the things that you realize if you've been in practice a long time is that a medication can work only as well as the ability to use the medication. So if you're giving a patient a prescription to use or a recommendation to use something twice a day, that is not always the most convenient thing to do. The likelihood that they're going to put that on their scalp twice a day is small. So I do actually start with 5% nightly to make it more convenient.
And then definitely find this over the counter, or do they need a prescription? Okay.
No, that's definitely over the counter. Yes.
And does it interfere with any women in childbearing age?
So if you're pregnant or nursing, you probably aren't going to be using many products, even topical ones. So I wouldn't recommend that. But as long as you're not, it's perfectly fine to use. There's very little systemic absorption. Now, some patients are very sensitive and you can have some systemic absorption, and the potential side effects for that might be that you, because, you know, it was originally a high blood pressure medication.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
In some cases, it's still used that way. But if you use a lot of it, and sometimes I've taken the 5%, say a patient's doing really well, but sometimes I look at them and follow up and they could do better on a higher percentage. So I will go to a compounding pharmacy. I'll call them up and I'll say, hey, can you make this in 7% or 10%? And then the patient might get some systemic absorption. They might end up in that case getting a little extra hair in areas that they don't really want it.
Right.
Their chin or their chest or their forehead. So you got to watch for that. That's reversible. So you could just back down on the dose.
Okay.
That's where you might want to also start to add some other treatments.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So there's Rogaine. So let me just reiterate that, guys. You know, Rogaine is a good option, right? So what other options are there? Medicine and over the counter.
Yeah, so, I would say I really would actually go to a prescription medication at this point. And so for a woman, the options are going to be something called spironolactone. And the other option is finasteride or dutasteride. And I'll explain those a little bit. Spironolactone is probably the safest one that somebody can go on. It's safe in childbearing ages, although you can't be on it if you're pregnant or planning a pregnancy.
Right.
It's an anti-androgen, as the other two are as well. The other two medications, the finasteride and dutasteride, are... the brand name for finasteride is Propecia. So many men are on this. In women, you need higher doses. I don't normally prescribe that in a woman who is of childbearing age. I mean, I would normally wait until they were menopausal and then it's perfectly safe. Or if they didn't want to have kids and they were on birth control, then it's an option for them as well. And that's an oral supplement along with an oral prescription along with a topical minoxidil.
And do you usually prescribe the oral prescription after the minoxidil? If it's not effective, then you're going to tack that on?
It depends on how severe the alopecia is and how motivated the patient is. So, you know, it's a little bit of an art to figure out who's going to benefit the most. And what I don't want is for somebody to say, oh, she just gave me minoxidil and I tried it and it didn't work. And then they don't come back and they don't respond. And that's hard. So, you know, I really do try to give them a step-by-step approach from the very beginning. So if this works, great, then we're going to add this or we're going to change this. And if this doesn't work, then at this stage, we're going to do this. And I always tell them up front that this can be a 1 year process. I mean, topicals, you know, people say 3 months, 6 months. I really say you've got to be on a regimen 6 to 12 months. Noticing some improvement. So
you hear that, Supernaturals. This is a journey. It's a marathon.
It's a journey. Yeah.
You don't see results in 3 months or in 3 weeks. That does not mean that it's not working. You have to be consistent, patient, and you have to keep trying. You have to keep going, especially if you're dedicated to restoring your hair, right?
Absolutely.
And yes, so absolutely. Let's speak to our more natural homeopathic
doctors
who are like, I'm not taking prescription, period.
Sure. No problem. So, you know, I just want to say one caveat. So natural doesn't mean that it's without side effects. It doesn't mean that it's not biologically active, because how else can it help you if it's not actually doing something?
Okay.
In your skin.
It's a misnomer. Okay.
I think so. So that's not a bad thing, and that's okay. So there are some supplements and herbal topical remedies that I think have shown good evidence that I feel comfortable telling my patients about. And there's no judgment, and you can use traditional and non-traditional together. That there's space for that too. But saw palmetto acts a little bit like an anti-androgen. So similarly to finasteride, you would not put the patient on both of those for obvious reasons. You can also use something, another product that I use topically is rosemary oil, which actually has almost equivalent efficacy as 2% minoxidil in studies that I've done, that I've seen, that I've read about. I would probably think about pumpkin seed oil, which is also a supplement orally that you can take that has a good anti-androgen effect in men and women. Thinking about minerals and vitamins, I normally won't supplement those without first looking at somebody's blood work. You know, I don't want to willy-nilly just correct them with something. Because, you know, vitamins, if you have excess amounts of vitamin D, vitamin E, zinc, selenium, vitamin A, they can actually have side effects too.
Right. So,
and the evidence isn't very clear that supplementation actually improves it. So I try to be very careful about how to go about recommending those. So for instance, if somebody has iron or ferritin that's sort of low, well, we know that since we have such a biologically active scalp, the hair follicles are so active, then they really need that blood flow. They need those nutrients. So you can fix those. You can get those up to a certain level, and it definitely has an effect. If you can check somebody's zinc levels and you find that they're pretty low, you can correct that. If you check their vitamin D levels, you should correct that. But again, you don't want to overcorrect, and you don't want to throw everything at them because those can have side effects.
So let's go really quick, because I know people are gonna, like, you know, their radar is up when they hear about the herbal supplements or the natural.
Sure.
So in what form is the saw palmetto, and which concentration is effective?
So saw palmetto is usually gonna be I believe it's 300 milligrams. I have this written down off the top of my head. 300 milligrams I would take twice a day.
Okay.
And pumpkin seed oil is 200 milligrams twice a day. And then there's two other supplements that I'd like to recommend as well. And these are sort of Ayurvedic herbs that I have found are very useful for any kind of alopecia, actually, but androgenetic alopecia. So there's ashwagandha.
Okay.
And then the other one is called Eclipta alba. I mean, the actual, it's Bringaraj. So both of these work in different ways. The ashwagandha is actually an adaptogenic herb. And what that means is that it modulates your stress levels. So if your cortisol goes up, it brings it back down to normal. If your cortisol is low, then it brings it back up to normal. And so that, in addition to the Bringaraj or Eclipta alba, the Eclipta alba is antioxidant and antimicrobial. That can be done topically, but I think orally is probably a better bet. Both of those are in the 500 milligram range.
Okay, that was my question. 500 milligrams for each.
Yeah, and I should caution those of you who wanted to use supplements. Supplements are not really regulated by the FDA in the same way that prescription medications are. And supplement manufacturers are not as well. So you really want to make sure that you research the manufacturer, make sure that what's in the bottle is actually what, you know, what they state that's in the bottle is actually what's in the bottle, that you're getting a standardized extract, because there are labs that will say, you know, you want the certain milligram dosing and you want to know that that's actually in the capsule.
Mm-hmm.
Know that there aren't any toxic ingredients in these herbs, which, you know, has a lot to do with additives that might be in there. Typically, if it's certified GMP, good manufacturing practices, that's a good sign. And read about the websites of the companies that have these supplements on there, because you can tell, you know, if they care, if they really care about the quality of their supplements. So those are really important.
Dr. Rada is dropping gems and bombs, especially for all you natural folks out there that love supplements. She gave you guys so much tea. And really quickly, I want to clarify the pumpkin seed oil.
Yes.
Pumpkin seed oil, right? That is to be taken orally.
Orally. Yeah, it's an oral.
Not topically.
No, not topically.
Oh, okay.
Rosemary oil is really a good option.
So when do I just take pumpkin seed oil? Like after a meal, in the middle of the night? Like when do I just take it?
Well, it's twice a day, so I would take it morning and evening.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I recommend taking supplements with food. They can all kind of, or at least a big glass of water.
Right.
Not on an empty stomach.
Awesome. Okay, pumpkin seed oil to be taken orally, twice daily. So really quickly, for someone who is just like, this is overwhelming.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Do you have a preferred brand that you recommend?
Not for the pumpkin seed oil. I do like, so Banyan Botanicals does really great supplements, ashwagandha and some of the Ayurvedic herbs. They do standardized extracts, which I quite like. So that's one that I recommend, and I have no conflict of interest. So I very much like to stay objective, because that's, you know, so I do the research and I try to figure out what's best for the patient and what works. I like to interact with the companies, but I get nothing out of it other than that.
Right.
Then I'm giving patients the right advice.
Right. In other words, guys, this is not sponsored. So she's basically telling you what she would personally use herself.
Yes, okay? Exactly.
Savannah Botanicals. Absolutely. Savannah Botanicals. And so I know we've had so many guests on the show and that's talked about treatment, and they've talked about other treatment options as well that are more like injections, like cortisone shots and PRP. Yeah. Is that something that you also recommend for someone with androgenic alopecia?
PRP for sure. Okay. It can be effective. It's not my starting point because it is expensive, not covered by insurance and so forth. Some people have difficulty with the injections. They can be a little uncomfortable, but it definitely, I would say the studies are still not quite there yet in terms of the effectiveness. But I mean, my gestalt and anecdotal case series and my patients, about 50% of patients definitely notice an improvement.
So we have some questions, Dr. Rada, really quickly, sure. In the chat box. And someone asked, so she wants to know if pumpkin seed oil, will it not work topically? Because I believe she's been using it topically and she wants to know if it's not effective topically.
I can only say that I haven't seen the studies that show that it's effective. Do I think that it could be effective? Yes, but I can't answer that definitively. I know that the studies that were done that were quite good were done on the oral supplementation. So I'm going to have to put a pin in that. And let's see, as we move forward and into this sort of integrative space, there's going to be more studies, more data out there. So I'll have to get back to you on that. I would say if you notice that something's improving, I don't know how long you've been using it for, that would be really great to know and to hear. But if not, and if you feel like you can maybe start a supplement orally, then maybe you might want to switch to that.
She said, thank you. And we also have another comment that, and I'm not naming anyone because I don't know who, you know, this is a safe place and hair loss is that, you know, so I'm not naming anyone, but we also have someone who says that she's currently going through hair thinning. Maybe it's due to menopause or stress. Is there something that you can recommend for her if she's assuming, I know obviously go see a professional so you can really evaluate that and see if it's definitely due to perimenopause and stress, but is there something that we can take overall that's going to help us? Is it the
ashwagandha? So, you know, I want to say a word about perimenopause. Perimenopause can last 7 to 14 years. There is a gradual decline in our estrogen levels that start, as I think most of us know, in our mid to late 30s and progresses through to, you know, our early 50s. That is called the perimenopausal period. It's not just the two, three years around the age of 50. So the likelihood is that if you are in that age group of 35 plus and you're noticing thinning in your hair and there is nothing else that you can think of that might be causing that, it may be female pattern thinning. And the best thing that you can do if you don't want to see somebody right away is perhaps start on topical minoxidil, perhaps order some of the supplements. Also think about, you know, how's your lifestyle? Are you sleeping okay? Is your diet good? You know, are you getting enough protein? Do you get enough vitamin D? Are you, you know, I really, really strongly recommend people switching over to from what we call the standard American diet that's high in high fat, high sugars, high carbs, to sort of try to switch to a more Mediterranean based. If you don't want to give up meat, that's okay. But maybe if you did, you could do plant-based or Mediterranean sort of fish-based. That can really, really help your energy levels and sleep.
That is awesome. I can keep you here all day, but I'm that because you are giving us so much information. You're dropping so many gems. So we're just going to close this out a little bit with just maintenance. You know, what can someone do to kind of just really help themselves along their hair growth journey and maintain the hair, healthy scalp and hair?
Yeah. So I do want to make a comment about hair products.
Okay.
So I, you know, shampooing hair, washing hair, and what kind of hair products you use. I mean, you don't have to wash your hair every day. I bet if we took a poll, most of us don't. but you do have to wash your hair to some degree. And particularly if you have sort of oiliness in the scalp, if you have dandruff issues, it is important to try to wash your hair at least once or twice a week regularly. And getting that shampoo, if particularly a medicated type of shampoo, like a Nizoral, a Head and Shoulders type of product, tea tree oil, topical shampoo, get it on your scalp, let it sit there for a few minutes and then rinse it out. And then use something to, if you want to use conditioner for your hair or anything afterwards, that's fine. Try not to get it on your scalp. Try to just use it on the shaft of the hair.
Okay.
There are, you know, if you have dry, brittle hair, oils are great. I mean, oils can be really great, particularly if you are in that perimenopausal period, you have dry, brittle hair, the hair is thinning. You know, coconut oil is terrific. Make sure you use virgin raw coconut oil. Other options for that, you could use, like I said, rosemary oil. Mm-hmm. Nice sort of leave-on that you can use. So those are really beneficial as well. So I just wanted to mention that about hair care. Try not to treat your hair gently.
Thank you. And I just got to ask one last question, and it's about the shampooing once or twice a week and then using possibly a medicated shampoo. Why is it important to wash your hair once a week?
And why, you know, we maybe not so much now during the pandemic where we're all staying inside, but you know, when you have hair in the environment, it's always picking up the chemicals, the air, the pollution, the toxicity. Your scalp does need some stimulation. And some antimicrobial benefit. I think a lot of us have, and then you can have buildup of residues. And it's the same kind of concept as, you know, you wash your face to get rid of some of the bacteria and the buildup of the grease and the sebum. So, you know, it's also helpful to wash. It will help help allow the medications, if you're using any like minoxidil or rosemary oil or anything like that topically, it'll help the absorption of those.
Silly question. So if I'm using something topically, do I use it for a clean scalp or just I apply it whenever and then I just wash my scalp?
It really depends on what the product is comprised of. So is it a solution, like a liquid?
Is it minoxidil?
So the solution, you can actually put that solution even on unwashed scalp, but it's better to do it after you wash your hair. You're going to get better penetration.
That is good to know. See, that's something that I learned today. Dr. Radha, is there any last words that you have for the Supernaturals?
I mean, other than it's really been a pleasure. You know, I love that you're doing this, by the way. I think this is incredible. And I'm really happy to be here. So, you know.
Thank you so much. Can you let us know where to find you? I know you're in the area.
Well, I work, you know, I see patients in the city Wednesdays and Thursdays. Oh, I wanted to let you know I do a fair amount of telemedicine. So if people don't want to come in and they want a diagnosis and a management through a telemedicine visit, we can do that. I developed a mobile app and a web-based platform for that called Skin Sage. And it's not just for hair. It's for our focus is on chronic dermatologic conditions. So acne, eczema, seborrhea, psoriasis, hair loss, anti-aging stuff. And it was really for connecting doctors and patients. And it's trying to incorporate the integrative aspect, the holistic lifestyle aspects, supplements, and kind of sort all that out for people. And then, you know, it's also about access, you know?
What's the name of the mobile app?
What's the what?
Can you repeat the name of the mobile app?
Skin Sage.
Skin Sage. Awesome. You have like a hair script for skin. That is awesome. I love what you're doing. And thank you for validating what we're doing, because sometimes you just wonder if it's even working, you know, or if it's necessary in the market. Yeah. But thank you so much. So they can find you on Skin Sage. They can download the app.
Yes, they can. They would have to be registered as a patient first. The best way to find out more is Dr. Radha NYC.
Okay.
DRRADHANYC. That's my Instagram, and I'm on LinkedIn, and it gives all my office information. And
perfect. So then you can rent his out
page, and that might be the best way.
Find her on Dr. Radha NYC on Instagram, and from there you can click the link in the bio, and you can find everything that she offers, her services, everything about Dr. Radha. Dr. Radha, thank you so much for joining us on the Supernaturals podcast, and it was a pleasure having you. Do not be a stranger to us.
Sure. The pleasure was mine. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye. You too.